The Athletic.
The rookery end of the Watford winning with style 4-1 at home to Manchester United. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the sound of a very rocking rookery at the end of Watford's home win. More than that, I think. We'll talk about it here on From the Rookery End, brought to you by The Athletic. Colin's with me. Good evening, Colin.
Good evening.
Good evening. We sound a little bit like 13-year-old pubescent boys because of our shouting and screaming and cheering. And Jason.
Good evening.
Yeah, well, Colin, you know, that was such... It feels like... such an important game in so many ways. Let's talk about why that might be. But the way that we were set up there, and you know, maybe you're going to bring in that what you experienced at the Emirates as well here, but there's so much change in that Watford team since the beginning of this run.
Well, I went to Elland Road in the pouring rain and watched possibly one of the most abject performances for years, and it was the same players. A different manager,
yeah.
Same players, but yeah, I think it's good to go back to the Emirates and think about that, because actually I know that some people were a bit disgruntled with the way we play, but when you play away from home against the top six side, if you want to call them that, against real quality players, what we had there was quite a lot of togetherness. Like we were quite solid. I know they got a couple of offside goals, but they're offside, so they're not goals, and they finally scored a goal because the referee let them. But what I came away from the Emirates with was always something. So I could see the green shoots, if you like, of Ranieri's influence on this team. Like, believe in yourself, work together, press the opposition. Don't let them just wander into your box whenever they want. You know, go out there, put a foot in, and work together and work hard. And then it's all gone because we lost. So then you think...
Well, we feel it's gone, don't we, as fans?
Yeah, as fans, exactly. So then you think, now it's an international break. Some of these players have got to go all over the world and come back, and then we've been terrible here all season, really. Apart from the Villa game, and even that was only the first half, because we conceded two goals in the second half. And then we've had Wolves and we've had Southampton, and we haven't been great here at home. But this to me felt like a continuation of the work that they'd done at before the Arsenal game. They'd worked again, and in this game against, let's face it, slightly weaker opposition, I felt technically, we were able to not just be solid and hold our lines and not let them through. We were able to go that extra step and press them in their own half, even at 2-1 up, when you're thinking, don't do that, because they'll hit us on the break. They're still trying to get onto the fullback, get onto Wan-Bissaka, get onto Luke Shaw, get onto the centre-backs, constantly running, working together. Now, that has got to be to do with Claudio's influence on the training ground and getting them just to believe in themselves. Because I say, it's the same players that played at Leeds, and they had no belief in themselves. They couldn't pass it 5 yards. And this performance felt like, I felt like that's who we are.
Yeah.
If we win or lose, fine, but I want to watch that. I want to watch us play like that.
Yeah.
And if we get beat, you know, so what? Sometimes better teams will beat you. But I don't want us to get beat camping out on our 18-yard box and the misplaced passes and not pressing and not working hard. And so I did feel like that was the first proper game, not of our season, but certainly of the Ranieri era. I thought that's the standard, and he won't want them to step back from that.
Jason, how do you see that, you know, feeling about that game now? You know, we are literally just outside. The cheering and the singing's died down a little bit. But it was how we played from the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. And the most telling section of the whole game for me was after Manchester United scored.
Yeah, and firstly, it was absolutely thoroughly deserved. My voice is going again, as usual, when we win. And like Connie said, we started on top. We absolutely bossed that first half, and we were relentless. And the tactic seemed to be test Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
And then sort of try and pick up the scraps from that, but then press. And as a team as well, it wasn't one player pressing and then everyone else sort of dropping back. Oh, he hasn't won the press. Okay, let's all drop back. It wasn't. It was bang, 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 bang.
Yeah. Eight, nine of them, felt like.
And they were going in for challenges, 50-50s, didn't always win them, but they were going in, they were disrupting Man United. Man United just couldn't get a foot on the ball. They couldn't get out of their half at times. And when they did, they were just launching it up to our centre-backs, and we were mopping up quite easily. And Man United just didn't. They had that one shot, I think, just after we scored. But they really, really weren't a threat. And we absolutely bossed and deserved to be in 2-0 up in the first half. You then sort of said about after Man United scored, I think we probably expected that they would come out different. They made two changes. Donny van der Beek was finding a lot of room in midfield. We probably a little bit more tired. Obviously, they'd be playing a pressing game, relentless like that, then players are going to tire, and it did look like we were tiring a little bit, and there were times where perhaps we weren't pressing as a team anymore. One or two players would go, others were sitting back and being a bit more cautious. They started to find sort of it easier to get the ball out to the wings. They were sort of getting behind us a lot more. The goal came and it was a little bit of a wobble, but then we started to get back into it, and the reaction to the goal was fantastic. And it sort of the prize, as it were, of doing that was Tom cleverly pressing Harry Maguire making a foul, getting his second yellow card and getting sent off, and then sort of the game kind of changed again.
Yeah, Colin, was there a point where you thought, oh no?
Yeah, I mean, I think when they scored so quickly
how long did that last though? Did it last a long time? Because I think, well, especially after that Maguire got sent off, but even then it was like we were still attacking. The goal didn't defeat us.
No.
It didn't make us sit back and worry. They still went, no, we know what we're doing. We know what we want to do. Like you said, you know, there's that definition. Was there a moment where, apart from that bit where you thought, oh no? And when was the moment where you went, we got this, lads?
Well, when the fourth goal went in. No, I think there's always a sense of dread when you're 2-1 up against the team that you think should beat you. I've said this before, John. When Watford win in the Premier League, it is always a shock. Doesn't matter whether we're playing Burnley, Southampton, whoever. When we win in the Premier League, it's a shock result. And when you beat a big team like this, it's an even bigger shock. So at 2-1, even with Maguire off, you can see how good Ronaldo is. I know he's 36 and he does nothing except sit on the centre back. He just walks up and down waiting for his chance, and he had some chances which he didn't take. He got one goal in, didn't he, which was ruled out for offside. He was often offside because you have to be when you're 36 and you're playing against 24 year old centre backs. But you know how good he is, you know how good these players are. In a heartbeat it can be 2-2, and then who knows what's going to happen. But as time ticked on, I felt that actually they had a forced substitutions. They had to take off Shaw. They suddenly were like, oh, if anyone gets injured now, we're already down to 10 men. We don't want to be down to 9 men. There was a bit of caution there, whereas we were able to make substitutions because it was the right time to make them. Yeah. I felt like when Luzer came off, I was a bit worried when Luzer came off. I was like, oh, he's been really, really good, but he was quite tired. And Kula came off clearly with a bit of a hamstring, and Troostekong Kong came on. But when Pedro came on for Luzer, and you think, oh my God, has he gone mad? He's taken off a defensive midfielder.
I love that substitution. You think, okay, that means we'll probably drop Sissoko and Cleverly back in, so it'll be a bit more solid at the back. But you know what you're going to get from Pedro. You know he is going to fight. He's going to battle. and a 2-1, that's exactly what we needed. He's going to win those aerial balls as well. But then he's also got the ability, as we saw, to make sort of those runs from deep. So when we were going to attack, he was able to do that as well. I thought it was a great... When I saw Luza coming off, I wasn't thinking, oh, yeah, it's going to be Pedro coming on. But then when I realised what the intention was, yeah, great idea.
And like you say, an intention of being ahead at that point against a team like Manchester United, and you know the win would mean a lot to the fans, even if it was 2-1. It means amazing because it was 4-1. But the fact that he did, you know, Ranieri's making those mental choices to keep pressing, to keep being who we are. I think that, for me, is the stuff that I'm taking forward from this game, apart from the amazing performance of it. You know, the PA announces the fact that the man of the match was Tom Cleverley. Whoever had to make that choice, that was a tough choice. It was a very tough choice, because there were performances all over that pitch, Colin.
There were.
I mean, why, Jason, was Cleverley for you, apart from he got Maguire sent off, but why else do you think that he was the one that won that... that man of the match?
Yeah, you tell Cleverley, right, what we're going to do today, Tom, is you're going to press, you're going to hassle that defender, you're going to get stuck in, you're going for every challenge, every ball. He's going to lap that up, isn't he? That's exactly what he wants to do.
I can do that for you.
As well, I mean, you said, yeah, there were great performances all over the pitch, and the team performance, again, talking about that team pressing, that allows Cleverley to play his natural game and to get stuck in. And yeah, he absolutely loved it, and you could tell. And like you say, there were many, many players on that pitch that could have got that today. One that I thought stood out for me was Kiko Femenia, who hasn't always had an easy ride in the Premier League. I think I've said before, sometimes his positioning catches him out and he doesn't always end up in the right position. I thought today's reading of the game was fantastic and absolutely stood out, which then obviously helps your positioning as well, because you're getting to the ball first, you're winning the ball, and getting up and down the line. First half again, he played some great triangles with whoever was with him on the midfield on that side, kept breaking the line, getting behind them, putting the cross in. Yeah, just a really, really good game from Firmino today.
The fact is that, you know, you were there saying he did really well in attack and he did really well in defence, and we've always felt that he wasn't able to do both. But his judging of some of the passes through to the Manchester United attacking line, just absolutely brilliant. He took one where he used his speed, he just sort of ran and just didn't even tackle, just, you know, grabbed the ball away from the Manchester United player. Who else, Colin? Who else is that, you know, those, for you, was a man of the, possible man of the match?
For me, the other one that really stood out was Emmanuel Dennis. Because he seems to play with a smile on his face.
Doesn't he? He does.
And there was one bit where he closed down a player at full sprint and took the ball cleanly, and the defender's kind of just is dwelling on the ball, or he doesn't think he's being pressed. Suddenly this guy appears out of nowhere. But it's not just that. Again, his reading of the game, the way he links with Messina, but the way he's always got his head up. And for long periods of the game, he played in the number nine position in the second half, and King went out to his left-sided spot. I love the fact that they're willing to do that. I don't know whether that's a coaching thing saying, come on, swap now, or whether they just go, I'm going to go out there for a bit. He goes, good, I'll go in the middle. But Dennis is a beast. He's an absolute beast. He's the sort of player that you want on your team, because he will close everything down. But he's also really, really skillful. And because he plays with his head up, he's always looking for... the pass. So I was really delighted that he got his goal, because I thought he really, really deserved it for his performance. I think King was excellent again.
For me, with Dennis, absolutely. The deserving the goal. Like you said, he deserved a goal, but also when we saw the first goal in that first half, you know, we deserved that. And he ran down, he put it through for King, and it was almost like, you deserve to be part of that goal, Dennis. Your hard work. If there's ever a play on a pitch where you think hard work pays off, that was the moment, and it was cherry on top when he scored the goal.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also Wan-Bissaka, I mean, who is playing for Manchester United. Let's not forget, we were playing Manchester United. They've got their problems, but those are Manchester United players. They spent a lot of money, brought him through. We watched him a lot at Palace. We know how good he is. And he looked like a novice who had never stepped foot in a Premier League. It was like his debut in the Premier League, because Dennis turned him inside out again and again and again, both sides. He tried to show him down the line, he beat him down the line. He tried to show him inside, he beat him inside, made a pass. He was just... all over the shop.
Well, actually, you know, in terms of wearing down Wan-Bissaka, Joshua King did his role of that early on in the first half. He was causing him problems and causing him hassle. But he was just, you know, as we're growing to love about him, this hold-up play, this speed player, the all-round striker that we talked about before, and he did it again.
Yeah, I know, like I said, we were targeting Wan-Bissaka, weren't we? And if you're going to stick those aerial balls in, you probably want Josh King to drift out and try and challenge Wan-Bissaka rather than Dennis, and that's, yeah, Dennis drifting inside, that's what you want. And yeah, like we say, he feels like a proper centre-forward, doesn't he? He can do everything. Okay, he can't do everything at a top level, and sometimes he gets it wrong, but it is just so refreshing to see a player of that quality and with those abilities to sort of almost play right across the line and be able to do what he needs to do when he's playing central, to be able to do what he's doing when he's out wide. We talked about sort of challenging Wan-Bissaka, he obviously scored the goals, but also when he is on the touchline, when he's got the ball, when he's chasing it down, I think there was one in the second half, but it's been a bit of a loose ball. He's gone hurtling down the line. I think he won a throw on, but it was like, yeah, it was another one of those, you know, sort of 50-50s. Is there anyone else in the team that can do everything like that for us? I don't think so. Not up front. So yeah, great to see.
Yeah, yeah. The one we were most interested in seeing today, because we saw him. He was on the pitch against Brighton. The game went past him a little bit, and we saw him in the Carling Cup. Mr. Loser. Imran Loser, who we've seen be successful and to have some great games at international level. Hopefully they're the games that he didn't get for Watford in the Carling Cup, and they were the games that gave him the confidence, because I reckon that worked, Colin. I reckon he's got a bit of confidence and he's ready for this now.
Well, he scored for Morocco, I think, in the week.
Yeah.
And he got a rocket up his from Claudio Ranieri a couple of weeks ago, said the boy's got to work harder. But he came to the club with a reputation for being a really, really good defensive midfielder, and we haven't seen it. And now we have. The thing that impressed me about him was his mobility. He picked up on the pressing thing. So he had Tom Cleverley, he's watching him, who's ahead of him. So basically you had Loser sitting deep, and then he had Sissoko and Cleverley in front. And Cleverley slightly further forward than Sissoko. Sissoko was captain as well, and also had a brilliant performance, I thought. And the midfield just functioned really well. But it functioned really well because we had Loser there protecting the back four, just keeping his head up and sniffing out the danger and snuffing out the danger when he could. And I just thought, because he's not that big, he's you know, he's Kante sized.
Yeah.
You know, he's quite a small fella. He's quick, probably quicker than you realise. But if he can read the game even half as well as someone like Kante, which he looked like he was doing today, then we've got a player on our hands that can really solve some major problems. Because just on a slight tangent, the league this year is so difficult. You look at the teams that are really struggling, like teams have been in the Premier League a lot and they can't win games. Lots of teams drew today, they can't win. It's like, and so that's given us a chance, because in other seasons maybe we'd be further down the league. But it's just interesting to see a player come into the side and grow. Obviously he's come to England, he's never been to England before, and he's now playing in the Premier League, which is, let's face it, tougher really, I think, than any other league in Europe in terms of the competitiveness and the teams you play week after week. You never go to play a little tiny weeny club. You know, you're always playing clubs that can beat you with good players. And so I thought, to see this progression, again, you've got to start looking at this canny old fox in the dugout, that he can dig a player out like that in a kind way. Yeah. He wasn't having a go at him, sort of Mourinho-esque. He was just saying he needs to work a bit harder, you know. And so he went, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, he puts in a performance like that, and that he's almost undroppable, I would have thought, against Leicester. You think, well, you've got to play him there because he did so well. A bit tough on Kutzka, but there we are.
You're the only man, by the way, Colin, because of your very dashing moustache, that can call Claudio Ranieri
canny old fox.
A canny old fox. Just so you're aware, I can't do that. That was Colin. Yeah, he definitely had his moments, I think, early on, where some of the passes were a little bit short and a little bit whatever, but I think more than anything, he's had a great performance against Manchester United. And if there was ever a win or a performance that it would be worth double, it's when you do it in such style against Manchester United. Part of that midfield, though, Colin, you've been a bit, not against it, but you were saying that's the working point that we need.
Yeah.
And it worked. It's working now.
Yeah. In fact, it was interesting to watch the two teams, because in the past we set up very much like Man United. They had McTominay and Matic, who were like two number sixes, to use old money. And then they've got Fernandes, who's a 10. So he disappears up the pitch and leaves them with just two players in midfield, whereas today we had a 6 as Loser, we just talked about, and 2 8s basically, Cleverley and Sissoko. So you've got, which is the modern way of playing a 4-3-3, right? You've got you're quite narrow, you're quite compact, and you've got three bodies there. And we were playing against two central midfielders in McTominay and Matic, neither of whom are very quick. and they really struggled. And in the past, we've been, it's been the other way around. We've seen teams like Southampton just walk through our midfield with a couple of passes, and today we were able to control the midfield. And I know I've said it a million times on this podcast, but if you can control the midfield, you give yourself the right to go and win the game. You give yourself a chance of winning the game because you've controlled the central area. We haven't done that all season. We've allowed teams to dominate us and try to win on the break. But even if you play a counter-attacking style of football, you've still got to control that central area because you've got to win the ball in order to get the ball forward from higher up the pitch. No good just trying to play on the break from your fullback who's standing on his own touch, you know, his touchline, or from the keeper. You've got to win the ball slightly higher up the pitch, and then you can get. And we did it again and again and again. We won the ball in midfield. Boom, it's gone. Sarr's gone down the right. You know, Dennis down the left. We were just that much further up the pitch that the counter-attacking was much more dangerous than it has been. So it looked like we had a functioning midfield. He may have stumbled over it because of Kutzka being suspended, but it looked more mobile, cleverly played slightly ahead of Sissoko. Sissoko looked like a captain. I mean, that was a captain's performance. Yeah. He was dictating, he was moving people around. Loser was doing his job. Everything was just basically working, and McTominay and Matic couldn't handle it.
Bit of a flurry of panic on Watford's social media this week with a story of someone finding a picture of a loan that the club had taken out. Did enjoy seeing the slight meltdown, but particularly did enjoy Simi KB. Her tweet was, "Unless anyone commenting on knowing about the club's finances is an FIA, which I'm sure is some sort of special finance certificate that you need, I'm not interested. Businesses do this all day long. And if you want to know more about exactly why Watford are taking out loans and what state the finances are in, then you want to check out Adam's latest article on The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend. Of course, go there if you haven't subscribed. If you have, then do make sure you go and have a read of that, because it certainly pricked up some ears and some eyes on social media this week. But Adam has got the full lowdown on that. And we'll have a good in-depth chat about that, of course, on Thursday's podcast with Adam and all the work that he's doing on The Athletic, where we get the news of the week. On the weekend, as fans, we talk about the game, and on Thursday, we chat to Adam. But being part of From the Rookery End family, you can go to fromtherookeryend.com/rookeryend and get a special deal. But do, if you think about doing that right now, you might want to wait until Monday. You might even listen to this on Monday, because The Athletic are running a special Black Friday offer across their entire network, where you'll get subscription for, wait for it, £1 a month for 12 months. Only £12 for an entire year of subscription to The Athletic. So if you haven't done it yet, this is a very good reason to do it. The offer ends at midnight on Sunday, November the 28th, and it kicks off on Monday morning, the 22nd. So if you haven't subscribed, do that. Listen to these podcasts absolutely ad-free, as well as all the writing of Adam and the fantastic team of writers The Athletic have.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
We haven't talked about Mr. Ismaïla Sarr, Jason. We're quite a way into the podcast. This is a bit different. And the weird thing about it is, we are recording this podcast after the game and not after about 20 minutes, when he missed two penalties. He didn't just miss them, he took two horrendous penalties. But then he scored an absolute peach, where, for me, he thought too much almost for the penalties, and he didn't think for a second when it came to that goal. He just, his complete natural ability flowed out of him.
You're right, the penalties were poor. First one was poor, second one, I'm not sure if he hit it a little bit harder, but it was, yeah, again, not a very good penalty. If you're going to sort of try and outwit the keeper and sort of put it one side, you're almost sort of, against a quality keeper like De Gea, it becomes a 50-50, doesn't it? If you're not putting it where he can't get to it, then it's just a roll of the dice. So it wasn't great. And then it's the way he reacted to that. I think not long after that, there was a misplaced pass, and you're starting to think, oh, God, is he? Yeah.
Were they those misplaced passes he did, or were they those great idea just not done right?
Now, there was one that was. I think there were a couple that weren't, but there was one really, really well. Yeah, a little sort of back from you. If that comes off, because he sort of full defence, Josh King would have been in. It would have looked good. Josh King just overrun it slightly between the two, and it didn't quite come off. But it worked for me. That was the right idea. But there's one before that he made the wrong decision. But then after that, I think there were a couple of times where He's made a great run and it's been a great ball, and we've seen the class of Harry Maguire. So before before Maguire got sent off that first half, if it wasn't for Maguire, we probably could have scored more goals, and we could have scored more goals anyway. But yeah, he made a couple of great last-ditch tackles where Sal was a bit unlucky because he's made the perfect run. Maguire's just got back to him. And then you're right, yeah, the goal, another great move. Talked about Kiko getting behind the line, sort of part of that going on down there. And he's found that space in the penalty area. And he's just sort of drifting in that space. No one's picked him up, and he's looked up, and he's just hit it perfectly into the corner where De Gea isn't going to get it. It's no longer is it a roll of the dice. It's likely to be a goal. So there you go. Yeah, so great. We sort of talked about him perhaps in slightly negative terms recently. Yeah. The way he sort of turned it around after the penalty misses, brilliant stuff.
Yeah, definitely didn't show, which a lot of fans have felt, that he has a sulking side to him, and he certainly didn't sulk after his two penalty misses. We talked about those first two goals. I feel, because Mike's not here, I must say, because he always says this when Watford, oh, well, you know, we should have been 5-0 down at half-time. Well, we should have been 4-0 up. Mr. Header, Jason, if you get a coaching tip for Joshua King when it comes to scoring a header, what's your technique?
Head it down.
Now,
to be fair, in the second half, Cristiano Ronaldo did exactly the same. When he headed it, he got run on Cathcart, yeah. and he didn't head it down either, and headed it over the bar. So, you know, Joshua King, Cristiano Ronaldo, they're all very much one and the same.
Yeah. What the...
Sorry, no. Joshua King did score today.
Yeah. the one thing, Colin, we talked about the first, the second, and the Dennis's goal for the fourth, but the third goal, we talked about what a great performance in terms of it was the great choice of making him the substitution we didn't expect. But when he came on, Mr. João Pedro, who we've seen already as we stand outside the lower end of Occupation Road, be hounded and signed this and photo with that. You know, his attitude and is always great, and we've talked about that before. But the thing is, he came on as a super sub as well. But that goal, didn't see it coming. I mean, how tight? I haven't seen a good replay because we're dancing around and screaming too much. But he got that in at an almost just ridiculously tight angle, didn't he?
Well, it's on his left foot.
Yeah.
So he's on the right side of the goal. So it's better on his left than his right, because he's got more goal to aim at. But he beat him at the near post.
Yeah.
Just smacked it straight into the near post. And I think because of what happened with the Sarr goal, I think, and maybe he gave him the eyes or he opened his body up or something, so that De Gea thought he was going to the far post, and he just left that little gap and he absolutely wellied it in. And the moment he came on, really, he just looked like, I mean, that boy could become a superstar.
Yeah.
Because he's got the physique, because he looks like he's grown like 6 inches since he's been here in the last 2 years. He's a big lad, and when he runs on the pitch, he's got some real charisma and presence. He runs straight to the middle of the park, so he's like, right, I'm here now. he never takes a backward step, but God, if you give him a yard, he's gone, and he's starting to show that confidence on the ball. With the ball at his feet, I don't know if he did just run in and score, or did he knock it off? And because I was kind of like still praying that we would get the 5-8 minutes, and we scored two goals after 90 minutes. Yeah, so I know, yeah. Which is great, and that's normally happens to us.
Maybe Fergie time that is.
It was, yeah. But he just the confidence to go and finish that. I mean, that's pretty good going, isn't it? And when you're thinking at 2-1, you assume that the collective mentality is we mustn't let them get in behind us. We mustn't let Ronaldo get a run on goal. We mustn't for him just to go nah. I'm going into the box and I'm going to score a goal now, and that's just going to make it. That's the best way to finish the game. Everyone can relax now. We're 3-1 up.
I wonder how coachable he is. Like, if it's all like, if he knows what he's doing, I'm just going to put him on to do that.
I think he is coachable because I think he's improving as a
but
player.
But freedom, though. You imagine him having the freedom, and if you know you give him his mental freedom, let's call it, but you know he can go and play the game he wants to play in the way he is so young, and you want him. You know, he does have a limitation, I'm sure, to the different roles he can play. Not sure what it'll be like in goal. But, you know, I mean, that if he's gone on there with his mental freedom, with his fun hat on, and that will just... we will get more from him, which is exactly the thing you wouldn't have expected, playing at home against Manchester United and only being 2-1 up. That's the most bizarre thing of the whole afternoon for me. But he is giving us a bit, Jason, a lot of a headache. A headache for what will be our attacking line. And we did see four of them play up front against Liverpool.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, to start the game, and it didn't work, it wasn't quite right.
are you going to keep him as a magical super sub?
I think so. I mean, we've had a couple of injuries today, haven't we? Which will change things. But in terms of that sort of the attack, I think you start with what you did today. Maybe if Sarr is injured, that it means Cucho coming on and playing. Well, I don't know. You maybe even swap Cucho to the left, bring Dennis out to the right. Or King to the right, depending on what they want to do, you know.
Where we like, lads, go with it.
Exactly. So I think, and you keep that midfield three that started today the same. And that means, not only keeping out Pedro, but keeping out Kutsko, who's going to be coming back. So let's leave Pedro as an impact sub. And he can work both ways. He could be, like today, coming on, bit of fight, bit of battle in the midfield, but still be a threat on the counter. If we need to go and win, it's someone who we know's got skills, got fight. If you've got a team trying to hold on to the ball, trying to keep possession, he will go and push, and he's got the grit and determination to try and win the ball back, and then the skill to take players on. He can drop deep. We know his shooting ability as well, from near, from far. He's someone that's got a range of talents that can help us in any situation when coming off the bench.
Colin, what are you taking forward from this game? What is it you think, if you could package one thing up and like bank it for the rest of the season from this game and this performance and everything we've sort of seen under Claudio, what do you think the one thing that you want to almost like bank?
I think it's just that togetherness and that competitiveness.
And no, they're kind of both. Togetherness and... No, competitiveness and... No.
All right, I'll go
that with... One's fight and one is friends.
I'll go with competitiveness then. Because I think that's so important in this league. If you can't compete, you can't win.
But is there a certain style, a certain thing, a certain tactic? The fact that we're high-pressing? Do you think that's... But is that something that's going to be great for us in all games?
Yeah, I think so. I think as long as you do it in the right way at the right time, putting other teams under pressure causes them problems. In the past, when we played here against Wolves and Southampton and obviously Liverpool, we didn't cause the opposition really any problems at all. So causing the opposition problems makes them have to think, possibly rethink, possibly change their tactics. And you do that by being competitive and getting up and pressing the ball and trying to win the ball higher up the pitch. We did that today really successfully, and it caused Manchester United massive problems, which actually he just sat on the bench and didn't try to solve, because he had players that he could have brought on in the first half to stop the fact that we were absolutely hammering them. And they did that really annoying thing of saying, oh yeah, you kicked towards the rookery first half. Well, thank you very much, Man United, because we saw the best first half of football from this team at home for ages.
This is what I was thinking, because A, at half-time it felt so weird, because we're now in the winter, it's very dark, and Watford kicking towards the first half, scoring goals, feeling positive. At half-time I was like, oh no, it's only half-time. This is not right. But actually, have we been getting it wrong for years? I mean, should we be giving our team the competitive advantage of running towards the home fans, loud home fans, get them going, score a couple of goals, get ahead, keep them into them, and go at half-time 2-0 up and be happy?
No.
All right.
No, because most teams score their goals in the second half. You score more goals in the second half than the first half. I understand.
We can change that trend.
We can win the game by half-time. Yeah. Win the game by half-time, and then you don't have to worry about the second half. But, yeah, no, let's keep it the old way.
All right. Jason, defensively... We have been solid. We let one goal in. We haven't had a clean sheet yet. And we haven't had one all season. That's the bit that's not quite there yet. But it feels closer. If Nkulu's injury isn't too bad, it feels like that will settle. And there's competition because Messina had a better game today. Foster was superb in goal again. Even though we've talked about the whole team coming forward, particularly that defence just seems like Kuda was like the controller. He was talking to Loser. He was talking to Cathcart, because Cathcart is not a leader by volume. He's a leader by example.
Yeah, I think obviously Kuda's got years of experience at international level, as has Craig Cathcart. So we had a very experienced back four really today. Messina had great first half. Struggled a bit maybe second half. I think Man United, like we were targeting when we sacked first half, they were starting to target him, I think, second half, sort of using their pace as he tired, sort of getting in behind him. Already talked about Kiko, but Nkulu, he just looks so calm on the ball. Yeah. There's no panic. You see, he'll intercept a pass, stop, put his foot on the ball.
Look up.
Look if someone tries to press him, he's got the ability to sidestep and then find a pass. Cathcart's come in off the back of keeping a clean sheet against the European champions this week, of course. So, we know he has got it in him. He's still there. And, I mean, he's up against Ronaldo. It's no mean feat. They've I mean, first half, kept him quiet. Absolutely kept him quiet. Obviously, danger was there second half. But yeah, they did a decent job. And we've already said about the reaction after the first goal. So we can't, yeah, we can't complain about the defence today. I just hope, yeah, with Nkulu. And I need to hold my hands up as well. When Nkulu went off, I think I swore, oh, we're in trouble now. But Trees came on and never really looked troubled, I don't think.
What's the haircut? His new slightly shorter crew cut that he's got.
He got stuck in one of your headers, I think, and did a decent enough job, did what was needed of him.
The most interesting, I think, we can all learn from this game is that the Manchester United youth team system is better than Watford's. Because we had three Manchester United youth team products in our team and they had one of ours. so these things are needed. Yeah, three. We had four ex-Manchester United players and they had technically how many, Jason?
Well, technically they had two because they had Sancho, that I think everyone knows about now, on the pitch. And their sub-goalie was Tom Heaton, who we had a week before, I think on signed for a week before the Potsdams came in when they very quickly dispensed of his services and brought in Manuel Almunia instead, and the rest is history.
Yeah. We go ahead, though, Colin, but we go away on a Sunday to Leicester City. Now, I listened to the Chelsea-Leicester game today and you hear, you know, they play Chelsea and we know how attacking and mobile the forward line of Chelsea is, whoever's playing. We look forward to seeing them at Vicarage Road on the 1st of December. With Leicester, they seem to be, their weakness in is their defence, their organisation. You've got to sort of say, I don't want to go in there saying, oh, it's an opportunity, we should go and win this game. But we are going to be well in it, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we will be. And I think, of course, you can't say that because, you know, in the Premier League, you literally have to scrap for every single point, unless you're Liverpool, Man City or Chelsea. But you know, you really have to, teams like Watford, and we've seen, you know, team Burnley, Southampton, Leeds, Aston Villa really struggling to get wins. They've been getting draws but not getting wins, obviously Norwich and Newcastle as well. So, but the other thing, John, not to be too sort of the a bit athletic-y about it, but we might have done...
Craig Cathcart, and a round of applause from the crowd. And he's the only one who got one. I saw Kiko, we've seen Jao Pedro, but he got a good round of applause.
Jao Pedro got a gasp. He got a round of applause, well deserved. But not to be too sort of journalistic about it, but we might have done ourselves a massive favour here today in terms of next weekend, because I think it's very, very hard for a Manchester United manager to survive after the run they've been on, losing away at Watford, newly promoted Watford. I think that's really hard. Brendan Rodgers is absolutely bang in the frame for that job. And if they move, they'll move fast, because they're not going to muck about. They're not going to want to play three games without a manager or putting some... because that's not how Man United do it. So he's already said he's open to the idea. I think conversations may have taken place. Yeah. So if that happens, Leicester will be without a manager probably. And that would and that could be a week of real destabilisation for them and their fans, because they don't want Rodgers to go, I'm sure. Although they're not having a great season either.
Well, but this feel for them...
Beating Man United, we might have destabilised Leicester. And that's an interesting idea. Now, of course, siege mentality can work against you and then come out fighting for whoever, you know, for the owners, for their places in the team, for their futures. But it's never a bad idea to play a team when they're suddenly all in a mess. It may not happen. They may go somewhere else. But I think there's a bit of uncertainty around Rodgers at the moment. They're not playing very well. And if we go and play like this, we can beat any team in the league. Except Liverpool, Manchester City, and Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm going to say. I looked at that and I sort of said, are they in that place that we were when someone's head has been turned? Snake got his head turned, things changed around here when we were a very good side. And you think, is that an effect for them? If you want to learn a thing from Leicester, get rid of him quicker than we kept Marco Silva. Jace, is there decisions you want to make, like any changes? You think it's only going to be changes because of injuries?
Exactly, yeah. I don't want to change that. Do you want to change that? No. Exactly. You got to hope that the two guys that went off are okay. I think, and can't believe I'm saying this, but perhaps of the two, would we be happier losing Sar than we would losing Nkulu?
Oh.
You know, and for me, I think I would be. I think I'd rather see Nkulu retain his place in defence, and if we lose Sarr, like I said before, we can probably bring Hernandez into the side. There are options. I think I'd bring Hernandez in, who I do feel a little bit sorry for, because that last goal I think he had the ball. I'm not sure he'd miscontrolled it, but Dennis came steaming in and nicked it off him and then scored. So Hernandez will be itching to get back out on that pitch and try and get his goal.
That's exactly what I was going to do, Dennis.
I'm just looking over my shoulder at Ismaïla Sarr, and he is limping quite badly. So it may be that his hamstring or something in his leg is gone, which is not great, and that looks like more than a week. But you never know, do you? You never know.
He picked up his child.
It's his left leg.
He's not held up.
It could be a calf, could be a hamstring. I don't think Nkulo's one looked like he just went, I'm halfway through this game or 65 minutes. I can feel it. He was right at the top of his hamstring, and it was like, that's a bit tight. I think I should come off right now. And luckily, we've got good substitutions. We've got quite a lot of strength in depth. We talked about the attacking players, like with Cucho and Pedro sitting on the bench like two bull mastiffs waiting to come on and tear up the opposition. You know you've got that in the locker. But equally, you know, Trista Kong is a good player. And Ngakia was on the, if Kiko suddenly says, oh, McCart's a bit tight, you can get him on.
Rose to Messina.
Yeah, so you think there's quite a lot of options. We've got two players pretty much for every position, and they bring different things, different qualities, but you don't feel like at the moment when we make a substitution that the quality of the team drops. You feel like sometimes it improves because you go off in a different direction, more attacking, more defensive, whatever. But so I feel pretty good about that, and I just think that the attitude of the attitude of the players, all of them, seems just spot on at the moment. I thought they were good against Arsenal, but they didn't have that kind of determination or ambition to get forward as much or press as high. But they've taken that on, and they've done it to one of the great biggest clubs in the world, and they've schooled them for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
just looking at our next, he's not limping as much as a limp there. He's a little limp for Nkulu as he comes out. He is a big lad. So yeah, he looks a little bit more mobile. So fingers crossed, he'll be okay.
So this is thank you to the From the Rooker End Injury Watch, as we stand at the bottom of our occupation road and consider how much limpiness Watford players have. Let's go back to the importance of that performance. We know we can't tell in terms of the season yet because hey, this game's just finished. Where does it sit though for you, Colin, in terms of games against the rich six that we've had? We've had wins against Manchester United here.
Yeah.
It felt better than those. There was a win against Chelsea. They were down to 10 men for a massive chunk of that game. No, there was one against Man City, was there? No, there wasn't. And we've beaten Arsenal here. And also, where does this one sort of sit to you? In fact, why is this one better than a lot of those?
Well, I would say it's up there. There's only one other big win that really just I couldn't believe had happened because it was in our first season in the Premier League, and we'd gone on a run under Kike Sanchez Flores. We in fact beat the three, as it turned out, the three relegated sides. We'd beaten Villa, Norwich, and Sunderland in that terrible game at Sunderland where they scored an own goal after 4 minutes, and then the rest of the game was just like hanging on. And then we came back and we won our fourth game in a row, and it was against Liverpool, and it was a 3-0 schooling by Ighalo and Deeney and Barami. Barami's cross for the third goal was it was the first time that had happened in the modern kind of Premier League era. We'd had two seasons obviously that we know all about in the Premier League, but they hadn't gone but suddenly it looked like we might actually, under Kike Sanchez Flores, we might survive in this league. We've just beaten Liverpool 3-0, we got 12 points from 12. It took us up into the 20s, and it looked like from then on we were safe, even though we had a terrible fade at the end. But this one, the context of this one is so important because we have struggled and we have had to change our manager yet again early in the season, and to come out after some very poor performances around the sacking of Munoz, to then see this build going to Arsenal, being a bit unlucky not to get a 0-0 draw, but then just taking this team on absolutely toe-to-toe, forehead-to-forehead, and scoring four goals. I mean, that's the thing about us, isn't it? When we play like this, we look like we've got goals in us. We did it at Everton. Sometimes we look like, where's the goal coming from? But when we get on it, we've got goals. We've those two games, 9 goals. So that's also something just glorious to watch as a Watford fan, because a lot of people, it's interesting, a lot of people around me are saying, oh, I'm fed up with the Premier League. It's so bloody hard. I watch my team lose all the time. I just want to be in the Championship and just go to some interesting grounds I haven't been to before. But when you're a small club playing in the Premier League and you get days like this, that makes it all worth it, I think. I mean, for me, I'd rather watch us play Man United and win like that than win every week, and think, well, all I'm thinking about now is promotion. So I'm not thinking about relegation. I refuse to think about it. It's far too early in the season to talk about that sort of thing. Brentford, everyone's got them going into Europe. Now they've, you know, they've lost five and drawn one in, you know, so they're plummeting. It's just like, it's too early. Once you get past Christmas, you start really seeing, you know, the window and everything. So at the moment, just sit back, enjoy the win. Watch it on Match of the Day 17 times in a row. Listen to them talk only about United afterwards and how terrible they are, and probably Solskjaer will be sacked before Match of the Day. Who knows? But that was a glorious win. And we, as a small club, and we are probably the smallest club in the league, us and Brentford, I guess, and Burnley maybe. But in terms of just fan base and budget, you know, we're tiny. We have no right to be in this league at all. You look at League One, you've got Charlton, Sunderland, Portsmouth. You know, in the Championship, you've got so many massive teams, much, much bigger than us, with much bigger fan bases, who would love to be where we are. Their fans would love to be where we are. And we are so lucky to be in a position that we're in when we get to go watch some of the best players who've ever played football, frankly, but beat them.
I mean, look at League One. You've got Sunderland, you've got Portsmouth, you've got Ipswich, you've got Sheffield Wednesday. They're all fans of those clubs. We're saying, well, we should be in the Premier League because we're big clubs. And yeah,
They're not. And as Scott said to us, it's about, you know, being here, being competitive and having days like this as a Watford fan. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Colin.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be back again on Thursday with more from the Rook End. Come on, you horns!
The Athletic.